Hello. Welcome to the first talk of Alpaca Village or Jugend Village for today. I will give a short overview on cross-platform development using Flutter. Some of you maybe already have seen one or another talk about it, at least if you are from the Jugend Hacked bubble. Today's talk is going to be a bit more advanced, so it's definitely not a beginner's talk, since it's meant publicly for the entire camp. Thanks for all of you being here this early in the morning. Who am I? I'm the one with the braid. I'm Dart and Flutter developer working in healthcare, mostly working on Matrix, apart from what I do at work. I'm interested in FreeBSD, Linux, RISC architectures, and I started getting in touch with Flutter back in 2018, so it's... if you're familiar with Flutter, that's pretty much when Flutter was released. In order to say it in good Danish, Fredder Flutter, what is Flutter? Flutter is a set of stuff you need or you can use for cross-platform development. It consists of the Dart platform. Dart is a programming language. We will get in touch with it later. The Flutter engine, which takes care of rendering and doing all the stuff on your device, running a Flutter application, foundation libraries, so everything making Flutter while you develop, all the libraries you use, design-specific widgets in order to have some predefined design stuff in order not to start from scratch every single time you develop an application. And very important, a huge set of dev tools in order to simplify the developer's life. So what do I like about this Dart and this Flutter thingy? The most common pattern in cross-platform development for ages was developing in JavaScript and having a browser engine rendering it everywhere. Of course, always running a browser in some cases is a bit inefficient. That's why Flutter uses a different approach. We don't have a browser engine, we don't have JavaScript, we have the Dart language compiling to native code. Of course, if we use native code, we have way better performance than if we interpret some stuff in a web engine. Of course, it's cross-platform development. You have a single code base, unlike if you develop a single iOS application, a single Android application, a single desktop application, a single web application. You have a single code base, and you write your stuff once, and you can use it everywhere. Of course, when developing some projects, that saves you lots of time, work power, and money, at least if you're a company. What I also prefer is Flutter adapts to your platform. You design your application once, you implement everything, and it looks pretty much similar on any device as you define it, but it adapts. It adapts to the usage patterns you know from devices, to the UX users are familiar with from whatever platform they run their application on, and that also simplifies both user experience and developer experience, because as developer, I do not need to take care of these fine-tuning tasks. And yeah, that's already the last point, development experience. Flutter is designed around developer experience, not about, how to interpret a language as close as a CPU would do, but how to make a language in a way developers would like it. And you feel that while developing, Flutter has a genius development experience because it is developed around the developers and not around the CPU it runs on. And basically, all that helps us getting rid of some legacy patterns in cross-platform development, simplifying our lives and our users' lives. So, quick history about Dart and Flutter. Dart, as already mentioned, is the programming language standalone. You can do anything with it. Well, not anything, but close to anything. Dart was initially released in 2011 and had absolutely nothing to do with Flutter. Dart aimed to replace JavaScript with a type-safe language, as in, we interpret these languages in browsers. As likely most of you have never used Dart as an interpreted language in your browser, you see this approach absolutely failed. So it was a nightmare from the implementation. No browser started implementing it, so it failed to replace JavaScript. And the developers of Dart, which is Google, were looking for another use case for Dart. That was back in 2015, where they thought, cross-platform development is a bit crappy. Let's use that programming language we designed and make something for cross-platform development with it. So back in 2015, development around Flutter started. Initially, it was just an Android engine for designing Android apps. But in 2018 already, when Flutter was initially released, more and more platforms were added. Second platform was iOS. Later on, the third platform to run on was web. And later on, desktop support was added for Windows, Linux, macOS. Nowadays, even the universal Windows platform for these crappy Microsoft Store apps. So it's pretty portable. Only relevant platform it does not run on is FreeBSD for reasons. We will get in touch with this trouble later. I don't know, has anyone of you ever used Flutter before? Yeah, some people. OK. Let's still have a short heads up. Just some basics of Flutter. So what is Flutter? It's mostly a UI framework. It's meant to design fancy UIs and to connect your UI to whatever backends you have. The elements of your user interface are called widgets in Flutter. So as you would have XML tags in, for example, HTML, web development, or in traditional Java Android development, where you have XML files, you have XML tags, you know, and in Flutter, you have widgets. Widgets are nested into a tree, as you know it from pretty any other UI design. You have widgets containing many children. Widgets may have siblings. So all your widgets you have in your application, they form a tree from the most basic ones being the entire applications to the tiniest ones, which might be a small text or whatever. And Flutter has a fancy combination, so the framework itself ships a fancy combination of super low-level widgets up to super high-level widgets. Everything from a single rendering object having nothing but a size property up to a fancy animated account chooser button for your drawer. So you have everything in between that, and that's a lot. And that makes development super easy because you can use high-level widgets wherever they suit, but you can form super easy to use individual widgets whenever you need customized design. Now it's talking a lot about Flutter. Let's get to some sample. And this is the shortest sample, or more or less the shortest sample I could find. That's a Flutter app. It's three lines of Dart code. You could write it in one line. It's nothing but one widget, a text. Everything we can see on the screen is a widget in Flutter. Or not everything, but most. Most of the things we can see on the screen is a widget. So this text is a widget. And we run an app. Run app is, I think, one of the most relevant high-level methods of Flutter. Run app tells the engine, OK, whatever is contained into this function, this is what we use as application. Usually, you place a material app or some high-level stuff containing lots of stuff, but you can also just place a text inside. So this is the most basic Flutter app you can get. It will do nothing but have an empty screen with which is a Klingon version of Hello World. Likely an ugly app, but that's a basic Flutter app. So we were talking about widgets. We have different types of widgets. The basic two types of widgets are stateless and stateful widgets. Stateless widgets, as the name indicates, are immutable. They're created once, and they have no state. They have no access to their properties. They are being created based on their surrounding, based on their parenting widgets. And once they're built, they're used. And as soon as anything changes, they're disposed and rebuilt. So they do not have any state on their own, but the entire state management of stateless widget is handled from the surrounding widgets, or in particular, the next parenting stateful widget. Stateful widgets, in opposite, are the opposite of stateless, which is what that's what I mean with the word opposite. So they are mutable, modifiable rendering objects. A stateful widget can react on its can have listeners, can react on user input, can change its state. You can have, for example, delays in there doing something. You can have animations going on, or everything which is changing the properties of a widget on its own is usually a stateful widget. So they are capable of self-modification, to say it in very simple words. So how to use stateful widgets, where to use stateless widgets, what's that stuff, how do I want to form my code? Have as few state management as possible. So whenever you can, use stateless widgets, because the life cycle of a stateless widget is way easier and way less heavy to compute for the engine. That's why I always use stateless widgets, apart from the parts of your code requiring state management. And if you do state management, use methods like didupdateWidgets in order to check whether your environment changed, whether you need to react on a change, or whether you can just stick with your current state of a widget without triggering rebuild and relayout. A common pattern in Flutter is having a controller being given as property to widgets in order to minimize the interaction of the widgets on their own. And use keys. Keys are a property of Flutter. Keys are tiny classes. You can provide them to widgets. And if a key is equal to the previous key on a rebuild of the screen, we stick with our state and we do not reinitialize, which saves us some performance. Now some just basic patterns. Okay, that was details about how to optimize performance, but what do I need to do to make some basic Flutter application? I mean, yeah, fine, you can nest some widgets, but you usually want to do some more interesting stuff. for example, routing. Most applications, websites, whatever, have many pages, have nested pages reacting on self stuff, and navigation, history handling can be a difficult task. Flutter has some pretty fancy mechanisms for that. Back in the past years, that usually was vRouter, but nowadays Flutter ships a core package called GoRouter, and GoRouter takes care of most of your routing tasks, navigation tasks, and also fancy stuff like nesting pages. If you want to have a different layout for desktop, you can nest pages into each other, which is quite comfortable for development. It hooks into the Material app.router, Cupertino app.router, or Widgets app.router, and is hence a navigation provider. It's super extensible. You can define custom page transitions. You can provide page builders in order to have yet another possibility to change transitions between pages and yards. It's simply easy to use. Here's a very short sample how to use a Go route, how to use Go router. If you use Go router, you once declare a router with a set of routes. They can be nested. For example, here we have our root route, which is slash, as you know it from URL navigation. Then we have a nested route, which is details. So in full, it's slash details. And there we get to some details page. And that's everything. Of course, there are some other options you can add in order to make it more fancy. But that's everything you need in order to have good and usable navigation during development. When using this router, you simply provide it to your app provider, which is Material app, Cupertino app, or Witches app, and then the .router constructor usually enables you to take a router config and use your router, and afterwards you simply use context.go, context.push, context.pop, and you navigate through your history with some advanced routing. Another very relevant thing about software development is storage. You usually need to store some user data. If it's the HTTP access token, your JWT to access your server backends, if it's the user data you store, you will store data. And first relevant point, JSON is not a storage. JSON is a data format for data transfer. It's not meant as a storage. It's the most, not the most inefficient, but a yet inefficient way to store data. That's why let's look at mechanisms not to use JSON in some files or some whatever as a storage, but some native or at least more performant ways to store user data. There are a couple of storage solutions in Flutter. Four of them presented here. SQLite, I think anyone who ever developed front-end software, at least in traditional desktop development, was touching SQLite. Also, if you developed server stuff, SQLite is something you often touch. SQLite is simply is SQL database you can store in your application. It's been there for ages. It's useful. It won't disappear. And that's fine. But there are, you know, more fancy mechanisms to store your data in Flutter. For example, Hive and Isar are some super fancy storage projects. Hive is a Dart native database implementation storing all data as binary objects. We will look at Hive later today, so that's everything about Hive as of now. And Isar is something more or less similar. It's also an object store, but it's a query-based object store, so it's more or less the hybrid of Hive and SQLite, if you want to call it that way. It's written in Rust. That's maybe a cursed combination, Flutter and Rust, but it's getting more and more popular because especially on the I/O platform, so on mobile devices and desktop devices, you can archive better performance using the Rust implementation compared to the Dart native one, whereas the web implementation of Isar is way less efficient. So it depends a bit on your use case whether that's the more performant one or less performant one. And the last but not least, and I think that's unfortunately the most common, you have some shared preferences and drop some JSON in there. JSON is not a storage. It's not a storage. Please don't use it. Some more words on Hive. Hive is super fancy. Some things about that one apply on Isar too, because Hive is super Dart native. You have type adapters, so you can store a runtime object, just put it into a Hive object store. You can just grab objects from your Hive object store, and they will restore as native Dart objects. As soon as you define a type adapter, they're listenable. So you can just listen on changes of a box. And as soon as there's a change, you can rebuild your screen about it. For example, if you have a list of stuff stored, and once there's the next item being inserted, because, for example, you receive it via a web stuff and store it, as soon as it's in the box, Hive communicates to any listener, hey, rebuild, this is your new item. And that's super comfortable and pretty efficient for development. Hive renders, if you want to call it that way, on different backends. There's the binary writer used for I/O platforms again, so mobile and desktop, where it simply serializes any object you give it into some Dart native types and writes them in a binary storage. The renderer for the web is IndexedDB, so the stuff is serialized into native JavaScript objects and being written into an IndexedDB. And the fancy stuff, you can do all that in a web worker, because I don't know how familiar you are with web development, but if you store lots of data in your IndexedDB in a main thread, your application is going to be very slow. That's why Hive is using web workers on demand in order to speed up. It technically takes a short time longer, but it does not block your main thread. And fancy stuff, Hive has an encryption API, so you can provide ciphers. There are some ciphers predefined, native Dart ciphers for AES. There are also some native platform native ciphers you can use, for example, using the Java Crypto API and Android. So there are quite fancy methods to encrypt your database, which is pretty useful for data address encryption. especially, I don't know, if your application has a passphrase lock, you can just use a passphrase for data address encryption and stuff. That's pretty useful, at least for privacy and something for relevant data. Here I have a super straight sample of Hive. This is how you write a type adapter. You simply have a definition of a Dart class. You have with person with some properties, name, age, and a list of friends the person hopefully has. Let's hope the list is not empty. And if you want to support this type in Hive in order to just, you know, put an instant of person into your object store, you add Hive type it, and it will generate some part of the code with some type adapter you can provide to Hive in order to serialize and deserialize Hive types. That's super useful, makes development sometimes very easy because you don't need to hassle with JSON's serialization and deserialization. It's simply comfortable. So far, now we're talking about routing, we're talking about some storage and why JSON is not a storage, and let's get to how Flutter is rendering, because I'm always a fan of having performant code, and if we want to have performant applications, we always need to take care of having performant front-end stuff, having performant rendering. I was already mentioning some parts of Flutter, which is the Flutter engine, the Dart language, and some stuff. Let's organize it in a diagram. We have the Flutter engine, the most basic stuff of Flutter. If your application runs, that's the first thing we take care of. We load the engine, and the engine takes care of everything else. The engine is written. Again, we look at the I/O platforms. The web platform is a bit different. We'll get to the web platform later today. The engine is written mostly in C++. It's using Skia, which is a UI rendering library for rendering. Of course, the engine ships Dart because, well, without Dart, we cannot have Flutter. And it takes care of text communication, which is relevant for accessibility, APIs for screen readers, and so on. These are the three main parts of the engine. And building on the engine, we have the Dart framework. We have the foundation, which is the very most basic Flutter library. Flutter has a few core libraries, and foundation is the most basic one. It contains anything you need to initialize Flutter applications, some constants, and some stuff. So this is the basic one. On that one, we have animation, painting, and gestures. Of course, applications need to process input, so gestures. After we know how which widgets we want to use, we need to have anything painting them, and the Dart framework is communicating through the engine how to paint stuff. After layouting, we have animation, so ticker providers, where we stay in sync with the GPU in order to have performant animations. On that one, we have rendering, which is the process taking care of layouting widgets, positioning them, and so on. On that building, we have widgets, and there's everything. We have core widgets like, I don't know, a simple box, or we have the fancy widgets like, I don't know, the Cupertino context menu with animation overflow and everything. So, if we animate stuff or render stuff, how does it work in Flutter? It's pretty easy. Your device has a GPU. It has one. At least it has anything taking care of GPU tasks. And this GPU is, or no, the Flutter engine is communicating to the GPU, checking its performance. So once the GPU is free to build a frame, the Flutter engine communicates to your application, you have a vSync. vSync is more or less every tick this GPU can render, you get a vSync, you can provide us with a new frame. If we animate something, for example, we can listen to any new tick of the CPU, GPU. We can listen to this vSync. For example, if we have an animation controller modifying a progress bar, every tick we receive, we can move it a bit further. Once we know the new state, so now the progress bar is no longer 100 pixels, but 105 pixels. We can build, check, okay, now it's a bit bigger, so we need to move this around and stuff. We lay out things after that one. Okay, this is now bigger, so I need to move that one away and stuff. We paint it for, okay, this progress bar has the color property blue, and there's a transparent thing around, so this is the next task the engine takes care of. And once we have that, we have a layer tree, give it over to the GPU, and the GPU is taking care of rendering it. So this is how an animation tick of Flutter works. And the life cycle of widgets, so whether they react on such a tick, how they build, how they layer, that differs between stateful and stateless widgets. We have stateless widgets. They are once being constructed, built, and once anything around their environment changes, if the screen size changes, if the layout around changes, they're simply being rebuilt. We don't take care of anything, we just rebuild them. It can be reused, you know, if we rebuild stuff, we're speaking in Flutter terms of a new build context. So once the layout or any property of your environment changes, you have a new build context because of the context you build around is different. That's what you call build context in Flutter. If we have a stateful widgets, it's a bit different. And once we have a new build context, we get a new state. And we can't use this state, listen to stuff, change things. But we do not necessarily need to rebuild. A stateful widget has hook-ins in order to decide on its own whether it's rebuilding or not. This is mostly the did update config, did update widget and stuff. So all the did update methods, they are handling context changes, and the stateful widget can correspondingly react on whether it's going to reinitialize or whether it's going to re-trigger a new build, or whether it's just sticking with its current state, whether it's updating some properties, whether it's just sticking with everything. A stateful widget can very fine-grainedly react on that, and you can save lots of performance using that. So let's get deeper into that stateful widget thingy, in particular the state of a widget. The stateful widget is not that interesting, it's once creating this state. That's what we saw on the last slide. We have this, yeah, it's just once creating the state, fine. We have a state, but what's happening in this state? Because this state must do state things, it needs to take care of stuff. If we create a state, we once initialize it. For example, in our initializer, we set a variable color to red. Okay, now we have this color set to red, but we did not paint anything yet. So we are in a dirty state where the state of our widget differs from what is shown on the UI. Since we just initialized the widget, nothing is shown, so it differs from the red color which should be shown. If it's dirty, we can call the setState method. Very, very, very relevant method in Flutter. SetState is a method available in any state, and it enables you to simply trigger a rebuild once the next frame is built. So we have a dirty state, we trigger a build, and then we have a clean state, because what should be displayed and what is being displayed is exactly the same. We have the color red, and what we render is red. Then things can happen. For example, the screen size can change. We get a new configuration. Or, for example, since the parameter of the widget was modified, we have a timeout calling a set state, for example, changing some properties. Then we are in a dirty state again. We trigger a rebuild, and the widget is in sync with what's being rendered again. And last but not least, we have disposal. Once the widget is no longer used, for example, because it's off stage, or in some cases you can manually dispose them, it's simply clean. It's both clean and disposed. No more listeners, no more stuff. We do not handle anything. Performance fine, because the widget no longer exists. Yeah. So that's it about the life cycle of widgets. Now brief stuff about performance of how to use widgets efficiently. I already mentioned keys. I want to get a bit deeper into them. A key is an object in Flutter, which takes care of the communication between the stateful widgets and their state. If we provide a key to a widget, the engine will not re-render it unless will not create a new state of the widget unless we provide a different key or no more key. So keys take care in order to preserve states around the life cycle of a widget. It prevents, for example, rebuilding on stream builders. You often have the case that you build, for example, an inbox list, the list of your recent mails against some stream builders. There may be some new messages popping in and stuff, and you might build them against stream builders. And if you use keys in that case, for example, a list view would always know, I already rendered this widget, I can preserve the state, I do not need to compute everything again. It's super useful for animations too, because if we animate stuff with different properties and hand over a key, we know we already rendered that and we do not need to start from scratch again. In general, caution with stream builders. Stream builders are fancy. Flutter has many builders. Listenable builders, so value listenable builders, stream builders, future builders, everything builders, where we wait for some asynchronous task or some stream task and build our UI against them. But use it with caution, because if we have a huge pile of stuff in builders, it's being rebuilt again and again, once anything of the data in the stream or whatever we use changes, that's inefficient. So always when using stream builders or value listenable builders, take care to only modify the fewest possible. Oh, I'm talking too much. For example, you can use keys again, they preserve the state. You can use animated lists where instead of saying, here, these are your 200 items, build against them, can communicate, item 5 updated, item 5 was now moved to number 3, to position number 3, and that's, of course, again, way more efficient than having a blob of 200 items we build again, just saying, hey, move this one to that one, that's way easier. For example, useful if you have a list where you can drag items, or if you have a list where single items might update, for example, the status list of your CI, this job just finished, it's completed, instead of building all the widgets showing all the statuses again and again, we can just communicate Flutter with an animated list. This one was changing. Please update that. Please render that single one again. That's way more efficient. Modern applications have many animations. There is kind of a trend to have animated figures hopping around, having introduction videos and whatsoever. And there are efficient and inefficient ways to do that. The most inefficient way is you play a video and have a GIF or a PNG. Please don't. There are more efficient ways for animations. There are vector animations. They're rendering way more efficiently than any APNG, any GIF, or any video would render, especially in Flutter, since Flutter does not use the native GIF player, but renders the GIF as, you know, frame per frame in the application, which is a bit inefficient. So if you want to have animations, fancy ones, you know, high level, where you have some people or alpacas jumping around in your application, rather use formats like Lottie to render, which is a pretty popular animation format, animation standard. If it's not kind of things hopping around, complex vector animations, but only widgets being animated, for example, use the animations package. Flutter team has developed a fancy package containing many pre-built animations you may use. And again, use keys, performance-wise, it's better. One more thing to focus on, we can deploy any Flutter app, or not any, but pretty any Flutter app as web application, but be cautious. by default, if you do not optimize on performance, you ship everything you have in your application on initial load. So you have your 5 megabyte application, and you load everything, and then you start executing. You can imagine how much fun this is on an edge network. Not at all. So Flutter has fancy mechanisms to optimize that. You can simply use different libraries, whereas you say, we only need this splash screen and maybe the main page on initial load and everything else, all the other libraries. For example, this framework we need for communication with whatever, we defer that one, we load it later on demand. That's way better. Also, Flutter supports browser-optimized Canvas Kit. Canvas Kit is the rendering library Flutter uses when being displayed as web app. There's still another one, but that's deprecated. And nowadays, Canvas Kit has platform-specific builds, and platform-specific as in browser-specific. There's a combined build of Canvas Kit, which is a giant blob, and there are single builds for optimized on Firefox, on Chrome, and for some reason they are way smaller. Let's wait for the train to pass by, otherwise no one can understand a single word. Okay, train is away again. Another thing relevant in when using Flutter for web, use web workers. That's generally in web good advice, always use web workers. I already mentioned Hive, for example, supports web workers, but there are many other things you can also do, tasks you can do in web workers, whether it may be encryption, heavy computation tasks. It's easy to place them in a web worker and only take the result instead of occupying your main thread with doing stuff. I think we don't need to get deeper into animations. We were already talking a lot about animations. Let's rather have some web fun, because I think web is fun, or web can be fun, because web is broken, in my opinion. Flutter has super deep, or Dart, rather Dart, has super deep interoperation with JavaScript. As mentioned, Dart was initially aimed to replace JavaScript, so there's still some leftovers of JavaScript, and you can have fun with it. Fun in a very cursed way. So, any Dart code you write can interop with JavaScript code at runtime. So you can set a Dart method as listener to a JavaScript method. That's very cursed. So for example, you can take some DOM element of an HTML page and make Dart listening on it. That's a bit cursed. Even more cursed, you can then have a JavaScript handler listening on Dart again. So you have an infinite interoperation between Dart and JavaScript, and you can have lots of fun with it, because null safety is a good approach, but JavaScript does not like it, because everything you do with Dart interop is just dynamic or not typed, or it's broken. Also, it's a bit fun, because Dart was not meant to support dynamic types in the dynamic way as we have it with JavaScript, so the syntax is a bit broken again. But still, I want to show it to you, because in my opinion, it's just fun to look at that. Again, a bit of the history. Again, Dart aimed to replace JavaScript. That's why we have lots of this JavaScript stuff there. And for some reason, all this JavaScript interop stuff remained part of the Dart core language even 8 years later. And yeah, 8 years ago, some APIs were implemented, and they're still semi-implemented as they were broken 8 years ago. And you know, in JavaScript, you have fancy types, which is no types. And if you want, you can have that with Dart as well. And I will show you how. First, some use cases. For example, apart from just having fun, there are real-world use cases. I also already had in professional context using Dart JS interop. For example, if you want to expose APIs of some framework, some library you wrote in Dart to a website using it, if you want to access native JavaScript APIs, for example, IndexedDB, WebWorker API, in Dart and Flutter app, it's again relevant to talk to JavaScript. If you're writing pure web apps in Dart, that's absolutely possible. You can write pure web apps in Dart without a single code of, without a single thingy of Flutter. It's possible. We already did that at work. It's possible, but I can't recommend it. And of course, Flutter's web engine needs to talk a lot with the website it's being displayed on, because otherwise some Dart only, no browser knows how to use it. That's why the Flutter engine itself is interoping a lot with the JavaScript, listening on events, listening on input, listening on screen changes, everything, exposing storage APIs and all this stuff. That's all. So the Flutter engine itself is the main user of Dart.js interop, and that's a pity because it's pain. So Dart features two basic libraries in order to have fun with JavaScript, JS, and JS, and util.js. Very creative names, by the way. And it mostly exposes the list of the list below, JSify, which makes any Dart object a JavaScript object. That's a bit fun because, of course, well, the memory storage of objects differs in JavaScript and Dart. But we have the JSify method converting any Dart runtime object to JavaScript object, you know, with the common syntax that you have arrays as fields and all the broken stuff. Allow interop, I already mentioned that one. That's what we use in order to convert JavaScript and Dart functions into Dart and JavaScript functions, vice versa, so we can have we can handle callbacks in JavaScript using allow interop in Dart, and we can simply handle a method defined in JavaScript as a normal Dart method. That's pretty useful, especially when reacting on user input and stuff. We have constructor calls, and I will show you a code sample because they're so ridiculous. You may love about it. And you can convert, of course, all languages have asynchronous features. JavaScript has the promise API for asynchronous tasks. In Dart, they are called futures, and you can convert them in between too. And you can access unsafe arrays in JavaScript from Dart using some APIs as well. Here's a small code sample. That's a code sample creating a JavaScript promise in Dart. So the most easiest task is just in JavaScript new promise, but expressed in Dart. So what do we do first? We access some property of a JavaScript object. We have the window property we know from JavaScript, and we can get a property, window.promise, which is the prototype, the JavaScript prototype of a promise. Later on, we call the constructor. So this prototype is technically a constructor. And we have the call constructor high-level method. So we call the constructor of our prototype with a JSified interop of an inline function resolving a completer to the value provided from the resolving promise. And yeah, that's just, it's just curse. So I'm lacking words to describe the hell of this syntax if you use it in production. It's more or less just meant as some fun if you want to have pain with JavaScript code as some giveaway here. Use the Dart.js interop code. Maybe that's not the best way to convince you of using Flutter, but that's it. Thanks for listening. Do you have questions? Nah, I scared everyone. Ah, no. I think someone is coming with a microphone over there.
What was your biggest project in Flutter?
Well, I'm a so-called professional Flutter developer, so I do Flutter development all my day. At work, I mostly build matrix clients in Flutter. If you look at open source, for example, I'm a maintainer of the Hive database. I'm contributor of Fluffy Chat. I was implementing some random stuff, but at work mostly I implement matrix clients, so that's what I mostly do. These are pretty complex applications.
Does Flutter have any media playback methods, like if you want to do streaming playback from the web?
Yeah, you can. You have everything from playing a simple MP3 file to WebRTC, everything supported. In Flutter, these are plugins or packages you can add to the core. I mean, Flutter as a core does not support it, but you have dozens of packages providing these functionalities, yes.
So who maintains and funds Flutter?
As mentioned in the beginning, Flutter is a project developed by Google. Evil one.
Working? Oh, yes. How good is the touch support on multiple platforms, so multi-touch or maybe stylus on multi-platforms?
It depends on the device. On Android and iOS and macOS, everything is as much supported as the operating system supports it. On web, it's a bit different. It does not recognize the difference between a stylus and a touch input, but it supports multi-touch. And that's the same state of Linux. I'm unsure about Windows. So when handling mobile and macOS, you can use whatever input, and it's super reliable. If you have web and Linux, stylus will be recognized as touch, but everything else works. So touch always works, multi-touch, no problem, gestures, whatever, it's just the problem about stylus.
Are there any more questions? Well, then, thank you, and flutter around.
Enjoy the camp!